if you give people the tools, they can act and they can become an activist. But it's really incumbent upon those of us who are trying to educate and inform to provide those tools and the tools that are easiest for people to utilize and with which to be productive.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. Today, my guest is another progressive political entrepreneur. Kim Scott is a longtime Democratic political consultant and the publisher of Demlist, which is a free daily political column and resource site. She's followed by many folks interested in the Democratic Party and progressive politics. I had a good conversation with Kim about her career, the origins and growth of Demlist, and how she goes about writing her column and keeping her enterprise on track. I hope you can take the time to listen to her. So, after a quick word from our sponsor, my interview with Kim Scott and Demlist.
This episode is brought to you by Graphicacy. Graphicacy is an analytic design firm that can help you advance the mission of your organization using your own real data and information. They are 21st century visual communicators who create interactive graphics, motion graphics, and data visualizations. You can find Graphicacy at graphicacy.com. That is GRAPHICACY.com. With Graphicacy's help, you can visualize a better world.
Hi, Kimberly. Would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Sure. Kimberly Scott. I am a political consultant and publisher of Demlist.com, which is a national political column and resource site for Democrats, progressives, and allies dedicated to informing and educating people every day on the politics, the issues, and the players.
So you have your own newsletter and resource site called Demlist. What's the kind of founding story for that? How did that get going?
It actually came about by accident, as so many things do. I am a big advocate of people taking risks, taking the road less traveled when the opportunity presents itself, because it's amazing how far that can take you in places where you least expected it. I'm a longtime political consultant. I originally started a company when I was 25 to work with open seat and challenger minority candidates running for Congress, and worked with predominantly congressional races, but also some statewide and then up to presidential eventually. And then from there, actually took some time off in 96 to work for the DNC. They pulled me in, particularly because of relationships I developed with labor in the progressive community. I was the senior finance advisor for campaign and then DNC and presidential. But so much of my work before had concentrated not just on national fundraising for these candidates, but because it was PAC money, you really needed to know the issues, particularly when you're dealing with candidates that are running for the first time or challenging. And so I actually ended up spending as much time writing for them and advising them on issues and positions. And so after the 96 presidential, I switched to working with progressive organizations nationally and helping partner them with labor and others and advising them on strategy and money, political money. And then I was at the 2008 convention and had clients there. And at that point, there was not really anything that acted as a resource for the public. The convention doesn't seem that long ago, but keeping in mind everything changes so much as it's every 4 years. But I put together a list of events for my clients Most of the events were not public. There was no public calendar of any kind. And this was supposed to be just for my clients. But because of my having worked with, you know, I also was an advisor to the Democratic National Committee, the Senate Campaign Committee, the governors, et cetera. So I had this list of mostly private events, but integrated it with what was public from the party. And my clients started forwarding this list to other people unbeknownst to me. And I just was inundated with requests for information. There just wasn't anything, again, that was public. I ended up producing this list daily. It was literally a PDF Excel document that I just posted on my site every day. I never solicited for it or even sponsors. I actually ended up having to hire someone to take in all the requests for information, because back then people actually also used the phone regularly. But I got, like, within 3 weeks, 3,000 requests. And so it was very clear that there was a need for this kind of proactive information. I kept it up through to our inaugural, and then I just dropped it. Because at that point, I was trying to get away from, let's say, more detailed work and less volume, and focusing more on advising and strategy. But then when the 2012 convention came around, then about 6 months beforehand, people, including some from the party, are like, are you going to do the list again? And so I actually then branded it as Dim List and launched it as a calendar and as the new daily column. It was followed by everyone, recommended by the party. It was all free, of course. And people had to submit events themselves for accuracy. I would vet them, and then I'd post them on this calendar. So that actually kept up past 2012. And then I was down for like a year for health reasons. And 2015 relaunched it. The column became really the main source. And the calendar was not year-round. But during key times like inaugural or the anti-inaugural in 2016, you know, it's obviously convention again. And so the column sort of took over as the main vehicle for culmination of 25 years of political experience and trying to help people understand things and really just educate and inform.
And what's the status of it right now?
It is followed in every state party, Democrats, that is, but also by activists. There's over 400 press. There's members of Congress, elected officials at all levels, labor, day-to-day voters, my mom and her friends. But also, thanks to Democrats Abroad, it's also followed in over 50 countries.
And how much of your time does it take nowadays?
It is absolutely full-time. I love the writing. I love every day getting thank yous from people around the country, from a local elected to, I got something from a woman who's a zoologist in Nebraska the other day. So I would like to spend more time actually in communication with the followers back and forth, but it's full time. It takes about 8 hours because it's really establishing what it is. And because it's daily, you know, it has to be timely, but at the same time, to really put out substance, you need to dedicate the extra hours in research. Research is at least 3 or 4 hours by itself, plus graphics, everything else. It's not that lengthy. That's also a challenge, is to keep it to a certain limit. So again, you're maintaining the attention of the reader, but then integrate charts and graphics always. But the charts are ones that I put together myself, always from different sources, because I'm putting them together in a way that I think the average reader will want to see and better understand. And that's not always the case when you're talking about, you know, charts from Ballotpedia or some of the other analysts. You know, again, is oriented towards the average person.
Well, tell me a little about your thought process when you are deciding what to write. Have you done today's yet?
Today's is in process.
How did you think about what am I going to write today?
what are you going to write about and how do you go about putting it together?
Usually the night before I frame it. So I decide what the subject is, get my mind around it, and frame it so that in the sense of how is this going to flow. Now, it usually changes in that process to some degree. So the title is always the last thing that I put up. But I can tell you the subject is the first thing decided, and that is based on the combination of what is, again, timely with regard to the news of the day or the week. There is certainly no shortage of material these days, these last 4 years. But what, again, makes most sense in trying to educate the follower. So today's early vote, and I'll start it out with an understanding what that is, just actually explaining it, because, again, I think a lot of writers assume, in general conversations, assume that someone knows the basics, like who the governor is of this state, or what DNC stands for, DSCC stands for. And I never assume that. So I always try to provide that within the explanation or in a box. And then kind of an overview of, I always say to, you know, past staff, always start from larger to smaller. You're painting a picture for someone. And at the same time, you start from the whole overview. So you can also make sure you're covering your flanks. You know, you're covering the breadth of the information, but then you're whittling it down to what makes the most sense. So it's like an introduction to the subject that, for instance, as of today, there are 27 million people who have already voted early. 5 more states started early vote today. And then I actually had previously put together, and I'm updating it, a state-by-state chart, which took itself probably 10 hours of research to go through and confirm, because all the resources are different. This is another thing I've discovered through this process. But what the early vote is in each state. So absentee, early voting, what those dates are, and then what the requirements are. You know, who requires ID, who doesn't. If you give people the tools, they can act and they can become an activist. But it's really incumbent upon those of us who are trying to educate and inform to provide those tools, and the tools that are easiest for people to utilize and with which to be productive.
I know when you have a project like this, it becomes almost compulsive. It becomes part of your life. You can't like see skipping it, really, right? Is that how you feel about?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell me about your relationship to this project.
And I think you probably understand that.
I've had a few projects in my day.
No, but this is your creation. You're doing great work. You know, you put this out every day or every other day or something. And it's a part of you. It's your baby. You have, just like the entrepreneurs that you interview, you've done the same thing. And so you have a unique perspective of having gone through that. And I'm sure it started in different iterations, just like raising a child. It develops and grows. Sometimes there's a few negatives in there, but mostly positive. And, you know, given all the work I did in the past, at such a relatively young age, I packed a lot into these years, let's say. I could be a very successful, very well-to-do lobbyist right now. There are past clients when I did races asked me to be their chief of staff when we won. But I was always driven by my passion, and that is what started as helping elect progressives, and with a focus on minorities, just because I felt that representation was important. And then the issues, you know, I'm drawn to the working family issues. I'm a progressive. But also the breadth of experience has also given me an understanding of the need to balance that and how you negotiate and how you motivate. The column came about out of, I think, just from these years of experience, people need it. Yes, my parents are occasionally, you know, so when are you going to get that grown-up job? I don't know if that'll ever happen. I get the feedback from the people, and it's not about ego. It is about knowing that you are really helping people understand, you know, the very complex world of, and conflicting world of issues today. And again, give me the tools to figure out what that means to them.
You've sort of hinted at a bit of a relationship with your audience. How much feedback is there typically?
A lot. Again, it depends. For just the daily, and the column's called Dim Daily, it's, anybody can sign up on dimlist.com. It is free and it's not sold. But that's part of that commitment to making sure that there's a real experience for people too. And everyone must sign up. So that's when I say that the beauty of the list, and it is an unbelievable list as far as the substance of activism and politics at every level, is that, you know, everybody has to self-subscribe and for their own security. And then that also lays a foundation for trust with your followers. And it's a wonderful relationship. I always respond to everyone. So just like if you donate, because it's supported largely by individual contributions, if you give me $5, you'll get an email, a personal email back from me. And it astounds people. And, you know, to me, it's a thank you, and not a generic one. But I've had, you know, numerous, you know, lengthy exchanges with people. For the most part, they're positive or they're asking for additional information. I spend, when I have more support, even more time trying to connect people to resources or, I mean, there's reporters who reach out and say, can you connect me to this person, that person? But I try to help people, and the questions are all over the place. You know, about issues, about connections, about, you know, where do I find this resource? Some can be very amusing. And then occasionally something like, I was attacked by a conservative publication for only posting pro-choice events on the calendar that we had, the Demlist convention calendar. There was a pro-life group that actually wanted to be a sponsor, and I turned it down. And they were furious. They did not handle it very well, I'm afraid. And then reported that to a conservative rag. And they sent out an article, Demlist refuses to post pro-life Democrats. And that, you know, is something I had to weigh too, because they're Democrats. But I have fought my whole life for pro-choice candidates and voices. And this is, that comes back to full circle, it is my publication.
It strikes me that there's a trade-off in that independence. There's the control and the freedom that you have to pick every day what you write about and to make decisions about who's on your list or who's in your events, but not placing it in an institution might not take advantage of sort of the reach that a group with a budget might have to grow it. Have you thought about?
Definitely. Well, I would like to. I mean, it's the problem again, when you are doing all the writing, the research, and it consumes so much of your time. And as you pointed out, and I would gather you're the same when you're very particular about detail and the final product, then sometimes there's more time spent on that than it is in what should be a larger pitch. Is something that I really would like to pursue after the election, is, you know, maybe going into the fold of another publication that, as you said, has the budget to help expand it.
What would be the ideal location for you, or some that would be exciting?
I think when you're looking to partner or in whatever way with another organization, it's really looking at their overall mission as well. Politico or Huffington Post or something like that, where at least I feel that there is some kind of political check on that, on what you're doing. It's not just a corporation that is looking to put out news.
But like a journalistic organ rather than the DNC or a CAP or some labor?
Yes, those are all possibilities as well. Like a CAP would be perfect, you know, because they're, again, a larger umbrella on all fronts and what that they do. But the thing is that it just I would need to feel secure that the content has not compromised as far as the mission that took it to this place. In the same way, you know, I'm not going to write an article about, you know, advocating for pro-life stance. So there has to be compatibility there on that level. And when you do that, then you have to realize you're giving up control. But if it's for the greater good, if you're able to expand the word, then that's the compromise you have to make.
Well, sometimes I've noted that people who have a publication in an institution have a yearning to take it out and be independent. And people who are independent think of the happiness of having the support. I don't know if there's a perfect place. Maybe being independent and large is where people want to go.
So I think, well, it just depends on, you know, the grass is greener on the other side. And, you know, I've worked with institutions, although I've always had a company most of my adult life. When you're consulting to candidates, it's also, you're humbled too. So it's, you know, and then when I've taken time to, a couple times in between, like to work within, like say the DNC, then I was quite comfortable doing that. I respect that it's someone else's house. So it's just like with candidates, I would say, and I understand I'm representing your name and your name is very important to you. It's your brand. And so I just want you to know that I will be careful with your brand and I, you know, I'll help expand it. It's something that we work with together. That's sort of my view. And so having done that at different times, I was quite comfortable in doing that. It's really about the team.
So how do you make a living doing this? What's the business model for this list? Is it purely asking people to contribute the $5 that you mentioned, or do you do advertising at all? How do you keep yourself afloat?
It could certainly be a more fine-tuned business model because, again, it is driven by passion. It is individual contributions and at all levels. You know, the average is probably $25. And that usually actually only solicit once, maybe twice a month. And then I get some support from labor as far as general sponsorships. And then some organizations as well. But this, again, where the ability to have, you know, a team that does that for you would be welcome.
You're an entrepreneur, though, building this out, a political entrepreneur. What have you learned about entrepreneurship in the political space from doing this?
It's a learning process. You know, I never intended to have my own company to start with before when I started doing candidates. I encourage people to take risks because you miss out on so much otherwise. But also, if the direction it can take you is fascinating. I mean, I have led and hopefully will continue to lead, you know, an unbelievable life. The things I have been able to experience are because I took those risks. I was 25. I didn't expect to have my own company. I was working for a PAC fundraising firm. And then the top client who I was working with, because to this day is the outside of my family, though, who has my greatest respect. It's a former congressman by the name of Harry Johnston. I was just a naive kid. But he wanted me to continue doing the fundraising for him after he won. And he was one of like the top races in the country that year. And I went with him instead of staying with the company. And because I had so much respect for him, but I didn't intend to have a company. It was going to be temporary. I was going to go work with labor on issues. And then he started getting some clients for me. And it just, all of a sudden, I had a company. I didn't realize it. And then I got used to only working for things that I believed in. And so, again, I could be financially set right now, but I went the way of passion. And I'm not saying that one is right or wrong, but I think that people need to trust their own instincts when that opportunity comes along. And that's where I advocate is take the leap. And if it doesn't work out, that's okay. And then make sure the leap is your own, that those decisions are your own and they're not for someone else or your parents or what you think it should be in people's minds. Because if you're going to work that hard, you've got to really love what you're doing.
I got to know a lot of Democratic PAC fundraisers and other fundraisers around the end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000s, when I had written software to help them do their jobs. What was different about what you did than others, if anything, during that time?
I would say the thing that separated me, I'm the only one who ever did it, and it is, again, the writing and the issues. So at one point, I actually hired someone to help write, as a staffer, to write legislative briefings. Because, you know, normally this is your, again, if you're raising money for incumbents, they've already got a record, they're on their committees, and your efforts are built around those, around that record and events. And when you're doing open seat and challengers and then minority candidates, it was a whole nother level of politics, one that I welcomed, but some people shied away from, then you're educating your candidate and whether, you know, they supported a certain level of gun control in the legislature, it's very different how they would support on a national level. You know, it translates differently to federal, and you have to educate them about that. And back then, we also had to do position papers, which people don't do anymore. So for AIPAC, you had to submit a position paper on your views on Israel or, you know, labor. What are your views on right to work? And I formalized that as a part of the process. Again, much harder. No one else did that. The DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, at the time actually used them as examples for people because it hadn't been done. And part of that is just my being so particular. I was raised by an English teacher. And so the quality of the writing, too, because when candidates would fill them out and I can't deal with this. It's just easier for me to write it. So there is some of that about control, but it's about the quality of the product. You can't walk into an organization and ask them for money and not know their issues. And you'd be amazed how much of that went around. And because the political directors would say, you know, this candidate came in and didn't know anything about our issues, hadn't done their background, hadn't done the political work necessary to talk to our state people. It's a very involved process if you do it the right way. But the success of your outcome are dependent on the worth of what you put in.
What do you think you've learned about our political system from that work that you put in all those years that would surprise people that are not in the know?
I mean, so much has changed. I feel like I've lived in this exact period of time in history where I've seen the evolution of so much, including during that period of the internet, and which just turn the whole world upside down in a good way. Because again, the ability to communicate is always the most important tool. But I would say that in simpler times, it's very much a family. Like I always look at it as a family. And then I think, I don't know that people, until you get in there, and like I always encourage people to go out on a campaign, always. They may say, okay, you've got the job, you have to be there tomorrow. And then you're going, what? Don't I have 2 weeks? Or my parents say I can't do this. Or, you know, where's the formal contract? I'm like, just go. You will learn more in 6 months than you will 6 years in any other profession. You will become close to people that you wouldn't otherwise be. You'll date people you wouldn't otherwise date. Your best friends, you spend all this time with them. And it's just an experience you cannot enjoy otherwise. And I said it's hard, hard work. I guess that is what I'm not sure that everybody can understand until you live through that. I can't encourage it enough and recommend it enough. It is worth every minute of hard work, and your life has changed.
You've been through so many election cycles now with a career of this length, having gotten going so early. What is most different in the time of Trump at the top of the ticket for the Republicans?
Oh, we just don't have enough hours for that. I guess it's good that I can still laugh. I try to do it daily just to remind myself. Once a month, I send out a humor roundup of from late night jokes. And it just says a little humor. And then the top line is to remind us to laugh, which is so important. The chaos and the degradation of our system. I don't blame anybody after just the unbelievable display of discord and dishonesty and disrespect to political institution, elected institutions, people of the United States. You know, for people to be disgusted with politics. And whereas I think the Democrats have handled it well, and Nancy Pelosi, to me, is the most amazing Speaker of the House we've ever had, and woman on nationally. But when there's so much going on, and people would say that's part of the Trump strategy, that it's just you're getting left and right and left and right so much that cast a doubt on the integrity of our system. And that's sad. And I really look forward to trying to help rebuild that integrity in the eyes of people. I think that the column will be even more important for that reason after the election, if all turns out as we hope it will, and then there is an opportunity to restore integrity to the White House.
What impact are you looking for when you write this column? What are you kind of collectively hoping it does out there?
If one person votes that wouldn't have otherwise, to me, it's about, I give them the tools, they can take it from there. But engaging people in the process, getting them to think, and most importantly, getting them to vote. But that is driven by motivation around interest in issues. And so it's all one big package. It's not just one methodology.
Do you think about publishing your column outside of an opt-in email list?
I've looked at different models of doing that. I mean, and of course, you know, post on social media, which we do. I post the column in blog form on the site after it goes out by email. So I would certainly love to expand that much, much more. But that is a matter of more resources and staff. But I'm always open to ways of expanding that audience or getting it out there. But there's so much innovation now too. I mean, there will be resources that didn't, you know, 2 years from now isn't on the radar screen or doesn't exist now that, you know, people may be using regularly. And I think that's very exciting. Because when you're trying, when you're genuinely trying to help people, then why not be open to all possibilities?
I imagine that each time we have an election or each time we have an inauguration now, you have to think to yourself, do I go forward? Do I continue to do this? What's the plan into the next cycle?
Excellent question. It's always sort of that way, isn't it? I mean, again, I know you can understand it's, and again, that's where my parents are like, don't you think the administration would be, you know, we always joke about that, but they loved him less. As a matter of fact, my mother, the retired English teacher, proofs it at the end of each day.
Oh,
man, that's nice. Oh, yeah. Well, she's a great activist also. But it comes back to, I think it's much a philosophy about life, and to me, work and life are the same, because it is about trying to change things and affect change in a positive way. And so I would be happy writing dim lists for the rest of my life. It combines everything. I'm helping people. Every day I'm helping people. The column is. So, but if I could do that, sit under the auspices of an organization that would allow me to help more people and expand that, I would love to do that. If I can still do it and then even help in a larger way, I would love to do that. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. You know, on the hopes that it's a Biden-Harris administration. You know, I also know all those folks and work regularly with the party committees. There's a lot of potential. Now, hopefully, after November 3rd, there'll be a lot of potential for everybody.
How many people subscribe currently?
It's about 15,000.
Whenever you have a list like that, I mean, it's hard not to think about who else would find the ability to reach these key 15,000 people useful?
And it really is. It's amazing, an amazing list. I'm humbled by it.
How do you go about taking advantage of that in a way that doesn't sabotage it?
Well, and that's a fine line. It really should be more commercial in a sense. I mean, there should be more advertising.
Well, that might detract from it, right?
That's what I said. I don't want to compromise the integrity of the product. But again, I think if I were in a position, we could certainly expand it with more resources. I just think there's all kinds of possibilities. I just have to figure out where that line is drawn. I feel I always need to be open to crossing over. I could sell this list. There's definitely a trust relationship. And I think that is probably the most important thing about DemList is it's a trusted resource. If you go to anybody at the DNC and they go, what about DemList? And they're like, oh yeah, that's part of family. I mean, they don't pay me, unfortunately, but I work very hard that people know that one, the information they get is accurate. Everything in there is actually accurate when it comes to figures or my charts or the information that I put together. You can tell when there's commentary. I try to limit it to what is a fair conversation or choice of words on the issue.
It feels like the market is strong for punditry and argumentative work and, opinion journalists rather than information as much. Where do you put yourself along that spectrum?
That is so actually well articulated, insightful, because I've had that conversation with so many people because I've had friends who've encouraged me to expand the commentary and expand the column to longer one. I feel like I've branded it as something that is that what's most important is the trust. And it's, clear I'm a Democrat and I do put commentary in there. But if I'm to be most effective, the most important thing needs to be to inform and engage. And if I am able to go beyond that and there's room to do that, then I do. But I think that I have the loyalty to my audience is based on the fact that this is one place where they can go. And if it's going to be in there, it's going to be trusted. And unfortunately, I don't think there's enough of that because we have gotten so much into this, the animus of argument. Again, under Trump, where you've got a president of the United States that has lied more than 25,000 documented times, then it's harder and harder for people to weed through what is true and what isn't. And so when you have a relatively short, concise, factual source that you know is going to be fair and honest, then I actually think people will welcome that even more.
Kim, is there a question that I failed to ask that you'd love to answer?
You've done a very good job. And of course, you're talking to a political person, so we can talk forever. The main is really advice to people who are getting engaged or starting out. For a long time, I was on the board of Campaigns and Elections magazine and did a lot of speaking and trainings and would always enjoy most speaking to younger audiences that were just out of college or just starting out. And my advice was always, sit back, listen. You're all type A. You were all president of your class. We don't care. Put your ego back in the box and sit and listen and learn and work your ass off, because it doesn't matter what really you've done in the past. You pay your dues in politics. We'll figure out real quickly how good you are. And it's not how smart you are. It's not about your GPA. It's how bright you are and how sharp you are. It's not about that test or this test. It's like what you're willing to do and how you can perform moving forward. And that's why we say get as much experience as you possibly can in the field. Go out, take the risk, spend the 3 months in the campaign. You'll be a new person. You'll learn more than you possibly could ever in years otherwise. And then figure out what's really important to you. But what's important to you, not other people. So follow your passion. I did. I have been for 25 years. But I No regrets so far.
Well, Kim, thanks so much for taking the time with me today. Anything else you want to say?
No, just thank you for all the good work you're doing.
Thank you for that.
That was Kim Scott. She's at demlist.com. Check it out. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at greatbattlefield.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.